you need expert financial advice you can both understand and trust on your savings and investments, retirement planning, equity release, or life and health insurance, talk to the experts at Facts and Figures Chartered Financial Planners. Phone 01233 722 922 or check them out at www.fffp.co.uk. Facts and Figures, independent financial advice everyone can follow. www.fffp.co.uk.
I'm a blackjack, keep your hands off of my stack.
Paul Andrews with The Business Bunker.
Welcome back to The Business Bunker Show on kentbusinessradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, April the 12th, with me, Paul Andrews, and marvellous Martin White. Welcome back. That was a bit of cheesy music, especially for one of our next guests coming up. But before we introduce him, I think we'll do another couple of emails, please, Martin. You ready? No, you're not. See, I caught him unawares. He just went flying out of the door because he leant on the door and it opened.
Well, I have got a couple, but I'm nearly out of them.
Oh, well, I'll read a couple because you've been doing most of the work and I've got dozens left. So this Thursday, we got a tweet about this earlier from Evo Girls, and I said I'd make reference to it. So Thursday, April the 21st, from 9:30 in the morning to 11:30, the Evo Girls are excited to be relaunching as an official social enterprise networking group. We have always run on a non-profit basis, but have big plans for 2016 and beyond. We would love to see you there. Our network in Ashford, Gravesend and Maidstone is growing rapidly, and we will be expanding to Tunbridge Wells this month. Evo Girls are about collaboration and support, and collaboration is a big thing that both Martin and I have been pushing for quite a while, so we're really pleased to support this. Evo Girls are about collaboration and support within the business community, and our mission is to drive women in business to success. The tickets are a paltry £5 for members and £10 for non-members. This includes tea, coffee and cake, alongside 2 hours of networking. All are welcome to come and to celebrate women in business. And somehow or another, I've managed to ingratiate myself and get into the meeting without having to wear a dress. So I'm going to be going. I'd like to see you there too, and you can find out about it by going to their website, which is evogirls.co.uk/events.
Going to mention the Sevenoaks Chamber Golf Day again that's happening on June the 9th. We spoke about this, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
But, absolutely. Is that the Nizzell's one?
Exactly. It's Nizzell's Golf and Country Club, which sounds lovely. June the 9th, in aid of three local charities, the Lewis Project, Sevenoaks Day Nursery and the Bridge Trust. Price per head is £75, including all the usual refreshments, tea, coffee, bacon roll, 18 holes of golf and a hot meal afterwards as well. So absolute bargain.
That can't be bad at all, can it?
Prizes on the day. You don't have to play like Danny Willett to take part, but you can register at sevenoakschamber.com.
Cool. I don't know if we did this one, but there's no harm in doing it again. I had a tweet from Kent Tweetups. Who says, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. at the Miller's Arms in Canterbury. That will be right opposite St. Radigan's car park, that will be. There's a tweet up with ACG translation, network for free, network in Kent. So that's the Kent tweet up, and that's at the Miller's Arms in Canterbury, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m, and easy to park because it's right opposite St. Radigan's car park. So get along there.
That's the lovely Arga, isn't it, I think, the lady that runs that.
It is, indeed, yeah.
That's probably, I think that's the second oldest tweet-up group after the one in Whitstable.
After the Whitstable one, which was the world's very first tweet-up, yeah.
Absolutely.
Whitstable. And a Hotel Continental in Beach Walk.
I remember
Whitstable.
You and I used to go there.
Yeah, just the two of us.
Regulars.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I haven't been there for a long time. Have you been?
Down there. No, I must get down there again. I've been meaning to, but, you know, there's an awful lot of networking going on at the moment.
There is indeed.
And on that note, Kent and Victor Chamber are running a free breakfast networking in conjunction with Crips.
Okay.
8 till 9:30 at Canterbury College next Thursday the 21st of April, and it's entitled Demystifying Contracts for East Kent Businesses, and that will be Crips delivering that. So plenty of opportunity to fill your boots on English breakfast, but also do some quality networking on the day.
Fantastic. There's a Croydon curry night. When? you ask? On the 21st of April, I say. And it's where? Wait for this. It's up the Khyber.
I bet that's Cane and Beer, isn't it?
It's Cane and Beer, and they're up the Khyber. And apparently at Khyber in Croydon, K-Y-B-E-R, that's the name of the restaurant, 6:30, it's only 20 quid. Our curry and beer networking nights are an ideal opportunity for local businesses and service providers to get together and exchange business cards in a relaxed, informal and friendly way of networking. £20 payable on the night entitles you to a free drink, a selection of starters, followed by a main course of your choice with rice and bread. Mm. If you would like to book your place, you can do this by calling me on 01689 768 273. That's 01689 768 273. Or you can email me at info at caneandbeer.co.uk. That's C-A-I-N-A-N-D-B-E-E-R, caneandbeer.co.uk. Just go to our, or you can just go to our website, caneandbeer.co.uk, and simply click the contact button. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you up the Khyber.
What a great way to go networking.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what a brilliant film that was, by the way, as well. One of my favourite all-time Carry On films, that one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Carry On Up the Khyber.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Nice one. Oh, yes.
I've got Matt shaking his head next to me. He's pretending it was before his time.
Is he throwing the youth card into this? Is he? Yeah, yeah. Like, you've lost me completely here. Was it, was this sometime
Kevin's
in 2000
there.
Or whatever?
Kevin's there.
Yeah. Seven Oaks Town Partnership invites you, as each and every one of you, to the Seven Oaks Business Show 2016. And it's taking place on Friday, the 22nd of April. And it's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And it's at the Plaza Suite at the Stag, London Road, Seven Oaks. There's business networking, presentations and exhibits. And there's over 100 goodie bags up for grabs. So do get along. I went to it last year. It's a brilliant little event. I do recommend that you go to it this year.
Congratulations to Realia Marketing, who are obviously...
Paul Williamson and the crew.
Down in Folkestone. They're obviously growing, so well done, you guys. Mm. They have appointed a new specialist PR and social media account executive, Olivia Miller. So congratulations, Olivia, on your new job, and congratulations, Realia, on a growing business.
Fantastic. Well done. Do you know what? I think it's about time we talk to our next guest. What do you reckon? Yeah, should we go for it? It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the first time, Mr. Kevin Bates of Medic Health. Kevin,
thank you very much.
No, absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us in the Business Bunker on this glorious day here. Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about Kevin and a little bit about your business and how you came to be the most handsome man in the building. which is how he introduced himself when he arrived.
Well... My name's Kevin Bates. I've not really well known in the Kent area. I'm an independent insurance consultant and I own a company called Medic Healthcare. Mainly I've been traipsing around London, looking after small to medium clients, also large clients, looking at their private medical insurance and their protection needs.
So this is the area that you specialise in, which is healthcare.
I specialise in private medical insurance, also with dental plans and cash plans, but also insuring individuals and businesses with protection, such as income protection and critical illness and life and business protection as well, key man shareholder.
Trying not to offend without knowing the technical terms, are you a broker?
I'm a broker. I'm an independent whole of market insurance brokerage.
Okay, fantastic. And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that about 15 years.
Okay.
Concentrating on mainly protection.
Okay.
We don't get involved in investment, pensions or anything. We do what we
offshore, do. Offshore shenanigans and all that.
We mainly deal in the protection market. So that's life, death and illness, really. They're the areas that we cover and to protect people.
Okay. There's some... I'm not being rude, but there's some basic products there. By that, I mean products that we all understand, like health insurance and dental plans and things like that for those with teeth.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think you kind of lobbed in there, which is something I think I want to expand on, which was key protection.
Yeah, business. There's so many businesses that are underinsured or uninsured.
Yeah.
And if you have a company that has partners and shareholders, they certainly should think about protecting their business. Otherwise, they're very vulnerable in the event of unexpected early death or illness to a key member of staff. It's vitally important that they have something in place to protect the longevity of that business.
Absolutely.
We see a lot of businesses, unfortunately, that go to the wall after perhaps one of the directors passes on or becomes ill. And then we find that, you know, the people they're dealing with, you know, it's quite simple that if you have somebody who is the, let's say, the sales director, and unfortunately something happens to the sales director, that could be a large portion of that company's turnover that they're going to find extremely hard to replace. And they may have to headhunt to find somebody to bring in. So putting key man in place, it's not just for, you know, a lump of money to pay for that. It's also relocation, perhaps a golden handshake for somebody coming in to head up their business. It leads them wide open to a competitor to go around stealing all their customers in the event of, you know, adversity with one of the directors, unfortunately.
Absolutely. I want to expand on that, but I want to ask you about something that I kind of came across a couple of months ago, which kind of made me start thinking. Somebody was telling me about trying to get protection in the following event. You've got a major shareholder, you know, like more than 80% of the business, that owns the business, that is looking a bit peaky, getting on a bit, maybe. And suddenly the rest of the business thinks, hold on a minute, if this guy pegs it, there's going to be, he's going to pass his shares on to his family, you know, a bunch of kids, possibly, that know nothing about running the business, don't want to know anything about running the business, are suddenly going to own the business. So somebody was telling me about a form of insurance where you could protect against that. I'm asking you this as a question, although I'm kind of telling you what I think.
Well, I can round that up for you.
Yeah.
If you have a shareholder in a company and they alone own a large percentage of the company, and it does happen that that shareholder, unfortunately, does become ill or passes away, what you have to remember is if you have shareholder protection in place, that director's part of the shares would pay out to the spouse, and you would have a cross-option agreement in place for the shareholder to be able to pass the other shares back to the other shareholders. This would be paid out from the company. What you will find is, and this is, you know, this is going to sound funny, but, you know, if you pass away, your wife may remarry, and that she may transfer her shares over to somebody that doesn't fit in your business.
Absolutely.
So now you're sitting around the table with a board of directors with somebody who knows nothing about your business, and that can be the downfall of your business.
So let me make sure I've understood this, and we'll try and set this up in some kind.
Are you feeling unwell?
I'm not getting any younger, mate. I'm really not. Yeah. The way I understood it, say nominally your shares are worth $1 million, or the company's worth £1 million, and so your shares are worth £800,000, and sadly you pass away, and your estate then passes to a spouse or children or whoever you've left it to. My understanding of the way that this kind of protection insurance can work is that instead of them inheriting the shares, they get £800,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
The spouse, or it can be written in trust to the spouse or the children. But it would, first of all, it could go back to the company. It all depends how the policy is written. Mm. But the thing is with a cross-option agreement is that the shareholder that passes on will pass those shares for the sum assured to the other directors, because the company is actually going to pay the insurance premium.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, it does attract a P11D benefit,
right?
But it's putting safety to your company and longevity, because at the end of the day, if you've got three directors, there's still two directors that want to carry on the business.
Yep.
They may want to, in the end, find another shareholder who's going to put some money in, but it is a way of protecting that business without getting somebody around that table that you don't really want there.
And presumably, it can also protect the other side of that equation, because a spouse or or children or whatever may not want to inherit a company.
That's exactly right. They may have nothing to do with it. It may be that they, you know, they're not involved. You know, let's be honest, how many companies with business owners where the wives don't really know what the husband actually does?
Yeah, luckily.
For business.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah.
So it's an extremely good thing to look at protecting your business for the long term.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's a replacement for a shareholders agreement.
But No.
It is a vehicle to find a financial solution to.
Yeah. What is potentially a problem? When I first came across it a few months ago, I hadn't really heard of it before, and I came across it. Somebody was talking to me about such things. Like they had recently put a similar thing in, and for the first time ever, I actually thought about it. It wasn't anything I'd ever thought about before. You know, and a lot of people will say, oh, you know, you need to do it, especially in light of some of the things that are going on this week in a political forum. But people will talk about the need to do inheritance tax planning and stuff like that. And lots of people will come and say, oh, you need to organize your estate to do this. And you realize, you know, if you die with a business your beneficiaries only have to pay 10% tax and da, 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 da. And we know all about that stuff. But this was something different that I'd never heard of before. And it struck me how useful it could be, but I wanted to clarify it with you because I wasn't entirely sure how it worked. So that's interesting.
Well, I'm off to Essex on Thursday for a meeting that, you know, the shareholders are selling part of the company. So I've got to relook at the whole shareholding. And we look right the way back from the memorandum and articles of how the company was associated and go right the way forward. We work with the accountants to get it right.
Right.
Okay. We are there to protect the business.
And is that a premium, Kevin, that can be put through the books of the business?
It can be put through the books, paid for by the company, but there is, it's, you know, some of these policies will attract a taxable benefit, unfortunately, for those directors. Yet, you know, a good way of doing life insurance for employed directors and employees is through something called Relevant Life, which is very tax advantageous. It's almost like getting the tax man to pay for your life policy.
Okay.
And that's another area that we specialise in.
What's that called?
Relevant Life.
Okay.
People can contact me and ask me about that if they want to.
Yeah. I mean, I want to come back and talk about the more basic kind of products that you offer, but I'm interested in these, for want of a better word, more esoteric things, because they're the kind of things that a lot of people have never heard of. Yet they serve a purpose.
Yes.
Like most financial products, even, you know, if you're the Prime Minister with allegedly dodgy offshore investments, they serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And without all the pitchfork waving of the mob out there that couldn't understand a tax return if they tried, a lot of these things were put in place for a reason. Yeah. So although it looks dodgy on the face of it, actually, it was a group of politicians that wrote that loophole, and they wrote that loophole for a reason. And I'm not suggesting what you've got are loophole things, but they're the kind of products that we're not familiar enough with that serve a real purpose if you think about it.
I think a lot of business owners just look at the day-to-day running of their business and don't look at the consequences of what would happen. They build a very successful business. They're extremely busy building that business and taking on new employees and buying other businesses that they seem to forget it could come down like a pack of cards if anything were to happen, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, insurance is for the inevitable. We never know when it's going to happen. We don't know what's around the corner. Then you just need to prepare your company so you are belt and braces.
Yeah, absolutely. Funnily enough, we just had a tweet from Cascade Insurance, a general insurance broker, and have been a supporter of this show. And they were tweeting in, and I was talking to lovely Julie from Cascade Insurance about more general insurances, you know, like public liability and employer liability and things like that. And especially with startup businesses as well, it's one of those things that so many people try to put off. Like, oh, insurance, you know, it's expensive. Oh, you know, blah, blah. Do you know what? We'll wait. And you just think, what? Really, what? You know, it's like anything, isn't it? You need the insurance when you need the insurance. That's the whole point. You can't predict when you're going to make the claim. So you can't, you know, people seem to act as if they go, do you know what, I'm going to have a car crash in 20 minutes, so I'll ring up a broker and take a policy out now. You can't do that. Exactly. You've got to protect yourself in advance.
You know, what we've seen lately is a lot of the people in the, you know, the public media and pop stars, unfortunately, passing away.
Yeah.
You know, it can, anything can happen to anybody at any stage. We just don't know what's around the corner.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of companies start up, but they don't actually budget for the essential things, business planning, looking ahead to make sure that their company is safe.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be there in 10 years' time.
Absolutely.
But I think the other thing as well, guys, is you've really got to look at the detail wording of your policy. So, you know, you can buy any insurance product online these days, but unless you actually bother to read the detail, are you actually insured for the eventuality that you're trying to get insured for?
The FCA do actually state that, you know, it is not a good idea to buy insurance online. It's a little bit like going into a paint shop that sells red paint and buying red paint. You've made that decision. It's your decision. If you phone an insurance company, you know, directly, they're not giving you an advised advice. We give advice and we are liable for that advice we give. We do an extremely complicated fact find, and we will make a policy fit like a glove. Obviously, affordability aspects are important, but we must look at everything and give good and best advice at all times.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're about.
Interestingly, a few weeks ago, we were involved with an organisation called Dice Matrix Consulting. And Dice Matrix are a quantitative analysis company. And they were doing research into exactly this area. They were looking at business insurance and the use of brokerages and what people felt. And we helped them with a survey they were doing. I haven't seen the results of that survey yet because they haven't published it yet. They're still analysing the data. But what they did is they surveyed two groups of people. They surveyed businesses and businesses' thoughts and feelings about insurance. And then they surveyed brokers and brokers' thoughts and feelings about the business community and how well insured or not they are. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come back. But I suspect in the case of small businesses, very small businesses, a lot of people will probably moan that there's no, you know, compare to market.com for business insurance or whatever. But the reality is, as Kevin just said, you don't want that even if it existed, because it is of no value to you at all. Just buying low-cost insurance doesn't do anything. Yeah, you might as well throw your money away.
What you've got to remember is these policies have to be written correctly. The underwriting needs to be written correctly. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons that insurance policies don't pay out is through non-disclosure. And we make sure that the disclosure is accurate and correct. We look at the company as a whole. The other thing we'll do is we will write the trusts for you, put the trusts in place so everything is belt and braces. In the event of a claim, we're going to have no problems and that company can be solvent and can carry on trading.
Fantastic.
I mean, just a simple example. I had a little bump in my car last week and I was on business and I got home and I knew I was insured, but actually then I had this, you know, this alarm went off in my head. Am I insured for business mileage?
Yeah.
And of course I was, because I discussed it.
That was lucky.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think you would have mentioned it on the radio otherwise, so yeah, somehow.
The other,
it's just a small example.
Yeah.
The other area that I specialise in, and I've done that for donkey's years, is private medical insurance.
Right.
And we're whole of market, and we look at the industry, we look at the underwriting style, the excess, the geographics of the hospitals. And we're very proud to say that we have the exclusivity and we'll be launching a policy very shortly for the new One Hospital in Ashford.
Oh, right.
Which is the only green hospital in the UK. And if anyone wants a tour, any companies want to go and look round the hospital, get in touch and I'll arrange it for you to go and have a look at the hospital. But that's a new policy we should be launching beginning to middle of May. We will be the exclusive broker and we've been chosen to head that up.
Fantastic. That is good news. Brilliant.
What are their car park barriers like, just out of interest, Kevin? Do they work? Or
The car park barrier works extremely well. Yeah. You drive up or you give your registration number before you get there. If you're booked in for an operation or whatever, the barrier is lifted and you go in there and you park for free.
Right.
You will be escorted in. If it's raining, you will be escorted in by an usher with an umbrella.
Yeah.
You will be given free food
Just like the NHS then.
It's like going to a 4 or 5 star hotel. It's okay. Absolutely amazing. And some of the equipment there is state of the art. And they haven't got it anywhere else. It's going to be just... It's going to be a centre of excellence.
And if I want to take my car out again at the end of the day, I can do that?
You go out and you'll speak to the lady and the barrier will rise and you can go in and out, no problem. If you're using the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. We could talk about this forever. Sadly, we ran out of time. Kevin, give us a shout for your website so that people can find out more about your business and what you do.
So, medichealthcare.co.uk.
Cool.
You can tweet me at medichealthuk. And you can also email me at kevin.bates@medichealthcare.co.uk.
Super.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Kevin. Thank you for talking to us about that. Really interesting stuff. You're absolutely right. We need to make more use of insurance brokers in the business field when we're talking about insurance to make sure that we have adequate coverage. We've got dozens more tweets. I'm not going to have a chance to read them all out. We've got another interesting guest to talk to who we're going to talk to very shortly. I'm going to do a couple of more emails and then we're going to talk to our next guest. The Wealden Business Group has swung in favour of Brexit. It's all over then. Why? We don't need to ask anyone else. The Wealden Business Group have decided. Wealden Business Group debated the forthcoming European Union referendum at its breakfast meeting last Wednesday, and the straw poll taken at the meeting showed that 9 members were in favour of leaving, and 8 were in favour of staying. So, all done. If you want to find out the full story about that, you can go to their website, which is wealdenbusinessgroup.co.uk, and click on the blog. And that will sort that out. Don't you think?
Definitely.
There is the Kent Invicta Chamber Muesli Mafia. I always wanted to introduce the Muesli Mafia to the ladies what latte so that they could have a full breakfast, but, you know, maybe one day. The Muesli Mafia, in conjunction with Kent Invicta Chamber, 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m, including a full English breakfast, members and non-members, £20. Join us at our popular and highly attended breakfast networking sessions in a congenial and relaxed atmosphere. There are people from all types of businesses. And the next one is this Thursday, the 14th of April, and it's at the Royal Wells in Tunbridge Wells. Then after, it's on Wednesday, the 11th of May at the Warren in Bromley. And then Thursday, the 26th of May at the Great Danes Hotel in Maidstone. And if you can't get up early, they've got a Muesli and Mafia afternoon tea. And that's from 1:30 until 3. Again, it's £20. And the next one is on Wednesday, the 8th of June, and that's at Brands Hatch Place Hotel at Forcombe.
I was in Sicily last year, funnily enough, wondering where all the mafia had got to. They're all over here.
They're all over here at the Chamber of Commerce.
We've got the Muesli Mafia. We've got a mini mafia at my golf club, and you don't want to cross those guys.
No, I wouldn't.
I think they're all living here.
Absolutely. We're going to talk to our next guest now. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Matt Fillery of
133 Design.
133. I had a sudden thought, was it I-33 or 133? Yeah, no, 133 Design. Matt, welcome to the Business Bunker Show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We know your wife doesn't know, so hopefully she's listening and she's going to find out what your business does. That's handy, isn't it?
Oh, she's got no idea.
Matrimonial problems sorted on the Business Bunker Show. There you go. Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about 133?
Okay, well, I'm a graphic designer, and I started out when I was 20. So, we're coming up to a full year now. Yeah,
right.
So, I do design, branding, web design, and over the years, I've worked on some real high-quality clients, such as Mason and Tunbridge Wells Hospital. We branded them.
Right.
We branded Kent County Council.
Okay.
And in the past, I've done work for AOL. Do you remember those horrible little CDs you used to get?
AOL, blimey, I remember them. Yeah,
so we used to do all that. So I worked with Shrek, Lucasfilm, Fox.
Okay.
So, in
your career, I want to explore this a little bit. Presumably you went to art college or something like that?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah. Was it CIAD or...?
I'd done a year at Foundation down at Canterbury.
Right.
And then 2 years at CIAD.
Yeah. So it was good. Cool. Okay. And then a lot of these branding things that you did, was that working for a corporate or have you always worked for yourself?
No, I started out full-time.
Right.
And then over the years I just sort of fell more into freelance just by pure fluke, really.
Right.
And it just suited me much better than working full-time for anyone else.
Okay. Now, graphic design is a term that most of us are familiar with. Mm-hmm. We've heard the term graphic design. Can you explain to us what it is from your perspective? What is graphic design and what isn't?
Well, graphic design really is making you guys look good. So right. if you're a startup business or
bit of a makeover,
SME, yeah. the idea is the fact that obviously you know what you want to do as a business. You know your business, whether you're startup or established.
Yep.
So it's our job to make you look fantastic and get you out there, because it's not easy, you know, and people do undervalue the importance of good branding.
Sure, absolutely.
There's been some real sort of horror cases in the past, haven't there? Big kind of multinational, massive brands like, was it BT or the Post Office that rebranded as Consignia?
Gap, yeah. I think, was probably the most famous one, when Gap rebranded, which lasted about a day thanks to social media. But the problem is that design agencies don't particularly get a good rap, because everyone thinks it's really expensive, when the big corporations are spending, you know, £500,000 for a logo that is really nothing more.
And all they've done is change the colour.
And they spend more time trying to justify why they do that as opposed to just admitting that they've changed the font. You know, it's as simple as that. So we try and just get rid of all that rubbish and just be straightforward as can be.
It's one of those things that graphic design, and forgive me if I'm completely wrong here, it wouldn't be the first time, but it seems to me that there's now a whole range of tools to help in graphic design that didn't used to exist in the dark and distant past. You know, you've got digital tools, computers, Photoshop, all that kind of stuff that you can use rather than just drawing something by hand. But it's got more complex as well, because in branding something, you've got to think about all the URLs, the social media, and there's loads of famous ones about web addresses that when you actually read them, they got really rude words halfway through because of the way they're spelled. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, Susan Boyle had one, didn't she? I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
Something obscene.
Yeah, absolutely, when you read it wrong.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and there's ones involving men's bodily bits and all kinds of things.
Yep.
And it's just because you can't use punctuation in a web address that, you know, you can read it in different ways. But not only that, when starting out on a brand, you've got to be able to get all those you know, you need the Twitter handle, the Facebook page, the web address, and all those kind of things, and it doesn't always become easy, because quite often you're down to putting underscores and slashes and dashes into things to make them work.
Yeah, it can be an absolute minefield. So what we like to do with branding, and what people don't really understand with a logo, they think because you've got a Mac, you just, you know, you press a button and it works for you. But it's a lot more, you know, it's the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
It's the personality of the company or of the individual.
Well, interestingly, I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you how you go, you know, you get a brief from a client that says, right, make us look good, Matt.
Right.
Make us look good, Matt.
What button do you press?
Make us look good. Where do you, as a creative team, start that process? What happens? Just step us through the process that you guys, as a business, go through when I rock up and go, Matt, make it so. Here's a pound. Let me know when you've done it. Yeah.
Right, well, normally we'd probably go to the pub first. It's the old-fashioned way, and you know, you mentioned earlier about technology and everything we got. At the end of the day, it all comes down to brainstorming on ideas, sketching out, and not being afraid to try new things. A perfect example is when we rebranded Maidstone Tunbridge Wells Hospitals.
Right.
Their logo is a very fluid MTW, because that's what they're known as. Now, I could waffle on for ages about how we got to that, but the basic was, with the NHS, they get a lot of bad press. And we wanted their staff to sort of step up to the plate and say, you know, we get bad press, but we're actually really good at what we do. So it started out, the initial thinking behind it was the doctors or all the staff actually signing a confirmation to guarantee that you'll get the best service and the best treatment that you could get at the MTW. So it started out as a signature. And then they really wanted to focus on the community, because that was a big buzzword, especially when, you know, the Tories got in. It was all about community. So we used to think about, well, okay, it's about people also stepping up to the plate and working this together, and also you know, like a sign of approval. So we started playing around with signatures and nice flowing fonts, and that in a nutshell is how we got to the MTW branding.
Right,
okay. So most people look at it and go, oh, it's just an italicized font, that's all. But it's not. There's actually a lot more thinking behind it.
Right.
And then obviously all their marketing goes out to that as well. If you look at any of the the advertising that we did for MTW, it's a really
it strikes me it's got a brief there, Paul.
In other words, if you put rubbish in, you get rubbish out.
Absolutely.
If you start with a quality brief that you can give someone like Matt to actually develop a brand identity,
make it so, Matt. Make it so. Yeah. It sounds to me like the creative process is an evolutionary process. You play with some ideas, you build on those ideas, you go, no, that won't work. But if we add horns to it, brilliant.
Exactly.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. So, it's just not being frightened to listen to all ideas. You know, someone might throw an idea at you and you go, oh, that's not really ideal. But you'll find that linked with another idea that you think of, together they would both work. You know, at the time, the signature thing, when we was presenting to the board of directors at MTW, it was like, oh, not really sure if we want to put our name to. We was like, well, no, obviously that's just the basics. We're not really asking you for your signatures.
Yeah.
But then once you start presenting ideas, and I think that's also the key, is if you show a lot of clients as many variations as you can, and without being rude, but a lot of clients, they don't really have a creative imagination, which is why they come to people like us in the first place.
Yeah.
So our attitude is we'll show you what it will look like as mock-ups, and that way you get an exact idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you this question.
Go on.
I do, but I don't expect you to name names. You can if you want, but I don't expect you to name names. How often, if indeed at all, do you come up with a range of ideas and you think, that's a cracker? Right, and you put it in front of the client, and they pick the one that you go, that's the worst one. We only threw that in because of, you know, we couldn't think of anything else. You don't have to answer that question, but does anything approximately like that ever happen?
You get, I did have one recently, actually, where we produced quite a lot of really nice logos for a company, and the one they chose was probably our least favourite.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it was awesome. But
yeah, no, I understand. Of course. Yeah, I understand.
No, but you get surprised, and I think one of the things to do is try to expect the unexpected, because people have again, it's their company, it's their bread and butter, and it's their personality, especially with startup businesses. So you can
They've got to live and breathe it, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they're not comfortable with it, then...
Well, I was going to ask, as a follow-up question, do you ever get anybody that comes back to you and went, do you know what? We changed our mind. Now that we've added this a couple of months, we don't like it. We prefer your, you know, choice number one. Does that ever happen?
Not really, because we managed to sort of talk them out to a compromise. Once we explain why we think that their choice might not necessarily, or what they want might not necessarily work.
Right, okay.
We find a happy medium. So again, they've got to be confident with it. When they're going out, they're selling their company and their brand. So, you know, we can't tell them choose this one because we like it better. You know, there's got to be reasons behind each one.
Yeah,
there's always a level of subjectivity there anyway, because we all drive different cars, we all wear different clothes, because we all like different things at the end of the day. So, you know, one client's view of your logo isn't necessarily going to be the view that you share.
No, absolutely. But you know, that's the problem with doing something like this, isn't it? Is that, you know, you brief someone like 133, they come up with some fabulous designs. Mm. You go, oh, I love that. Mm. Da, 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 da. You show it to your mum or your wife or something. She goes, that's horrible.
Yeah.
It looks like a dying duck or something.
If my wife doesn't like it, I know I'm on a winner.
Right. As long as you're happy with it, though, that's the key thing. No, if you get a load of work back and you don't like any of it, then it becomes a problem. Where do we go from here?
Exactly. And I think that's the key point I was trying to make, that you could ask a million people, you know, and someone's always going to go, don't like that, or it reminds me of the wrong thing. You know, you can't please them all the people all the time. You just can't.
No, that's it. You get that quite a bit, actually. You know, we've just rebranded a car leasing company over in Leicester. And they was really happy with it. You know, it's pulled them up to the 21st century. And, you know, we're working with a web agency that are designing and building the web for us. But then they come back about 3 weeks later, and one of the guys in the office wanted to he's designed a sign for outside the building. And it's like, this isn't Frank Butcher's car lot. You know, you're talking... You're leasing Mercs and BMs, you know, some real high quality cars, and you've just put something that Del Boy would knock up in with his crowns in about 5. So again, you have to go back to the client, and you have to explain it diplomatically why it won't work.
That's a really interesting point as well, because Roy was talking earlier on about integrated marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you come up with an idea, you come up with a creative concept, but it's got to work across so many different media, digital, print, TV, whatever it might be. You know, you're lucky enough to have those kind of budgets.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And you might not have the budget now, but you might in a year's time, and you don't want to go through a rebranding exercise because it now no longer works on some media that you've decided to pick. 18 months later.
Exactly. You know, yeah. There's a big difference, especially in this digital age where people, they brand just for the digital. And then when it comes to wanting stationery or advertising, they realise that nothing works because it's all done in RGB rather than seeing what you're just a,
yeah.
It is a minefield. You really got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, how many people have gone through that process and then actually realise that they can't get anywhere near that URL as a domain name?
Yeah, exactly.
So why not start with a domain name and kind of build it around that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a fascinating topic because most of us don't, you know, we all, I'm sure all of us at some point, probably when we first started our business, started off by designing our own kind of logos because that's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
I do a lot of work with young people and funnily enough, next week I'm chairing judges of the Young Enterprise South East Kent, finals, but I do a Dragon's Den kind of thing at a local school. And the one thing the kids always do with their business ideas is they always come to you with logos and business cards. Nice. No matter what the business idea they've thought of, they spend most of their time into designing the logos and stuff like that. And because that's the bit they find fun.
Yeah.
And that's the bit they recognise. Of course, most of us are useless at it. But it's the first thing we always have a go at, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sweet science. It's not an easy thing to design a logo. A lot of people think it is. Unfortunately, you get some of these stock libraries that you can buy a logo for £50. But that's not you. That's not why you're doing your business.
Absolutely.
That's not your personality. You know, anyone can do that.
Yeah.
So. For me, Paul, that's the moment the business comes alive.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why it's so important. Mm. It might only be 10% of what you're ultimately going to have to do to bring that business to life.
Yeah, absolutely.
But once you've got it on paper and you've got a visual identity, for me, that's when it starts to become real.
Mm. Absolutely.
So it's so important.
And sometimes you can get locked in as well. You know, with my primary company, Jobs in Kent, we've got a horrible logo. It is absolutely horrible. It's been horrible for years. But every time we go and sit down and try and change it, everybody goes, oh, you don't want to do that. Yeah. You know, everybody knows it. You don't want to get away from that. You're going to lose your brand identity. And I go, but it's horrible.
But sometimes it's, if you're established and you've had this logo going for years, you know, I've just done another, it's not a rebrand, for a Cord Engineering, which are based in Mason. They're 20 years running, very successful small family business. And they didn't want to change their logo too much. So it was just a modernisation, you know, it's just a smoother fonts, cleaner, a lighter blue, because again, you have to think about it using online as well as print.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can adapt logos and modernise them without having a drastic change, but people don't realise that.
I mean, that's where BT were, Paul, you know.
Yeah.
100 million quid later, they changed it all back again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just nonsense.
We won't talk about BT. Not near me, thank you. They are not my favourite company. Matt, we could talk about this forever.
Yeah, fine.
Sadly, we're running out of time. Cool. Give us a shout for your website so people can come out and find about you. And I have to say, give this man a follow on Twitter. He's got some great tweets that he's put out, especially about the show today. There's some fabulous stuff.
Okay, we're at 133.co.uk. Now, at the time, it was a good name, but when you try and tell people what the web address is, it's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
So it's the number one, it's the word 30, it's the number three. Okay.
Right.
You can find us on Twitter. And at the moment, we're just launching some design packages for startup companies.
Fabulous.
And SMEs that are looking to hit the ground running. It's not as expensive as you think. In fact, it's a lot cheaper than you think, and it can be turned around. You know, we can get you up and running in about a week, 2 weeks.
So you've got a suite of products that you're delivering, aren't you, for a fixed price?
Yeah, I think for startup businesses, you know, we do your logo, your website, carry across all your branding for about $9.50. And for SMEs, again, a bigger website, your SEO, modernise your logo or refresh it exactly how you want. Carry that across all your stationery, and that's, I think that starts at about 15. I'm not too sure. I'll have a look.
1500, yeah.
Yeah, it's about that, give or take.
Fantastic.
Money well spent.
Absolutely. Matt, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming on to the Business Funk Show, Mr. Matt Fillery
of
133. Fantastic. Do you know, it's that time in the show. We're fast running out of time here. It's been really exciting. I'm not going to read any more tweets. We've got dozens of tweets still there, but we're not going to have time for them. It's that time in the show when we concentrate on the news roundup from the Federation of Small Business. Channel Radio News Update. Apparently it's a news update. Ratepayers have been invited to be notified of draft rateable values. Business ratepayers in England and Wales can register their email address in order to be notified when draft rateable values are published in September 2016. The Valuation Office Agency expects to publish the updated rateable values on the 30th of September 2016 as part of the 2017 re-evaluation and will be making them available online only. The re-evaluation involves an assessment of the rateable values of all business premises in England and Wales. Finalised rateable values and new business rates will come into force on the 1st of April 2017. I've just got to make a comment there. I paid a local council to come and give me a view on getting a change of use planning permission on Fruitworks, which is a community hot desking space that I own in Canterbury. And they came out and their answer was, I don't know. I went, what? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? And they went, hot desking space, it's not on my list. I don't know what plan, I don't know what you need. I said, well, it's an office. And they went, no, you can't have an office. Well, why? Well, because it's not, it's a hot desk space. Yeah, but it's an office. And they went, yeah, but it's not on the list. I went, well, it's an internet cafe. And they went, oh, no, it's not an internet cafe. So we're stuck. We don't know. I can't even apply for the planning permission because I don't know what I should apply for. How about that? But they're going to reevaluate my rates anyway, and I'm sure they'll go down, won't they? No. Martin.
Yes. We've been talking over the last month about the EU referendum. The date is fixed now for the 23rd of June. Mm. But what the FSB are doing, which I think is very interesting, is they are trying to... they are trying to give people objective rather than subjective information about what staying or leaving the EU will actually mean for Great Britain.
Okay.
And they are doing that via a podcast debate. Are you aware of that, Paul?
I am slightly aware of it, yeah.
I mean, I haven't got any details in terms of when or where that's happening, but FSB members... we'll be able to take part in a series of podcasts that will hopefully provide small businesses with the information that they need to make an informed decision.
Unlike some other supposed business support organisations, the FSB has remained stoutly neutral in this. The FSB as an organisation does not have a view on the clash thing. Should I stay or should I go? It is maintaining a neutral position. They have surveyed their members, and consistently, through all the surveys they've done, they've come out basically 50-50. So they're just trying to put in place a series of things that puts facts in front of people. One of the problems with this whole debate from both sides is there's a lot of opinion and a lot of emotion and a lot of fear and scare tactics, but not much of it is actually based on any factual information. And so that's what they're trying to do. Let's hope they can do it. I am actually due to host, to chair an EU debate with Dan Hannan MP and Hugo Harrison in Seven Oaks School in a couple of weeks' time. And again, we're focusing on Brexit, staying or going, purely from a small business point of view. That we're restricting it to... what do we think as small business owners is likely to happen in the case of leaving or in the case of staying? Mm. And that's the best you can do, really, because we don't have any facts either way, really, because we don't know. It's the future.
Mm. Good. Well, as and when, I'm sure those podcasts...
Yeah, if you go to the fsb.org.uk website, you can click on the details of where you can access those podcasts.
Brilliant. Good.
There's an online extortion demand that's been affecting UK businesses that we need to be aware of. Online extortion demands, the information contained within this alert is based on a number of reports made to Action Fraud. The purpose of the alert is to make businesses aware of the problem, to share information and to put you in touch with the relevant law enforcement agencies. The alert content, within the past 24 hours, a number of businesses throughout the UK have received extortion demands from a group calling themselves Rip Killer Team. Okay. The group have sent emails demanding payment of between £300 and £500 in bitcoins by a certain date and time. If their demand is not met, they have threatened to launch a cyber attack against the business and its reputation by automating hundreds of negative reviews online. The demand states that once their actions have started, they cannot be undone. So for protection and prevention advice, if you have received such a demand or you receive one in the future, you advise to make a report to Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040, 0300 123 2040, or via the online reporting tool at their website, which is www.actionfraud.police.uk, actionfraud.police.uk. Do not pay the demand. Retain the original emails with headers if possible. Maintain a timeline of the attack should it occur, recording all times and type and content of the contact. All affected businesses, whether the attack is attempted or successful, should report it straight away to actionfraudpolice.uk.
Thank you. We all get those emails every day, don't we, from Sadly. People purporting to be from. But that's sort of taking it to another level, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. Yeah.
Right, National Insurance Contributions, Class 1, specifically for apprentices. The law changed on the 6th of April. Providing your apprentice is in a full-time apprenticeship scheme, under 25 and earning below £827 per week, there are no Class 1 National Insurance contributions to be paid for those individuals. HMRC have just published some new updated guidelines on that, so have a look at the HMRC website. But that's quite important, obviously, for employers.
Absolutely. There's a two-year plan to increase the take-up of R&D tax credits and tax relief. HMRC has announced a two-year plan to increase take-up of research and development tax relief among small firms. Measures will focus primarily on increasing awareness and making it easier for firms to apply for this type of tax relief. For example, HMRC will publish improved guidance to help increase firms' understanding of the R&D tax relief process and to provide business certainty through the Advanced Assurance Scheme. Under the Advanced Assurance Scheme, which was launched in November 2015, HMRC will assure eligible firms that their first 3 years of R&D tax relief claims will be allowed without inquiry.
Just got an interesting piece here about how important small and micro businesses are in terms of job creation. Since April 2014, 84% of new jobs created in the private sector have been in small and medium-sized businesses. And what this showcases really is the role that the FSB play in terms of lobbying policymakers, because we quite often forget that, you know, that's really where the FSB started.
Absolutely.
As a lobbying organisation on behalf of small businesses. So they are lobbying at the highest levels of government, basically, to make sure that it's as easy as it possibly can be for small businesses to employ people moving forwards, and apprenticeships are just one example of that. So obviously that's having an effect with regard to national insurance contributions, for example.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings us to the end of this week's FSB News Update.
Channel Radio News Update.
I just want to briefly make you aware of something that's happening fairly soon. Mr. David Barry of this parish, the presenter of the Imaginarium radio show on Channel Radio on a Saturday afternoon, is the actor formerly known as Frankie Abbott in the 70s sitcom Please Sir and the Fence Street Gang. David is reprising his role of Frankie Abbott on the stage. And A Day in the Lives of Frankie Abbott launches. Its opening night is at the Phoenix Artist Club London on the 20th of April. And you can book your tickets by going to their website, which is phoenixartistclub.com. There's a whole range of shows on tour. And Frankie, or David, with the lovely Linda Reagan, will be appearing in Sittingbourne, Broadstairs and Gravesend in Kent as well as other places around the country. So do keep out and listen for that, because I've seen the script. It's fabulously funny. And do listen to David's show on 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon on Channel Radio. However, we're right at the end of the show, and I just want to tell you about what's coming up next on Channel Radio. We have the lovely Natalie Beneig, who will be on air at 4 o'clock with the Kent Creative live show. Natalie interviews people from the Kent Creative scene, photographers, artists, people involved in the creative industries. But she's looking at what they do from a business point of view as well as from a creative point of view. So do check that out, 4 o'clock on Channel Radio today. Natalie Benaghs, Kent Creative Live. She's sat out in the green room at the moment getting her show ready, and we're all waving at her, but she's ignoring us. Typical of the French, that.
We're not waving in French, that's right.
Exactly, that's what it is. We need to wave in French, otherwise she won't pay any attention to us. Anyway, coming up at 5 o'clock, straight after Natalie, is we have the man with the stripy socks. Yeah?
You're listening to Craig Avery on Channel Radio.
And right after Craig Avery at 7 p.m, Mr. Jamie Andrews with a new potato show, 18 tracks of unsigned, new and up and coming music. So do check that out. That's 7 till 9 tonight, new potato show. And then at 9 o'clock, we have our comedy music program. I was Lord Kitchener's valet. This year, 1967. Is the object of our derision. So do have a listen to that. And then, of course, as always on a Tuesday night, we round off with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Cool drum beat and a squidgy bass. I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So that rounds off the evening, this evening on Tuesday the 12th of April on channelradio.co.uk. You've been listening to the Business Bunker Show with me, Paul Andrews, and marvellous Martin White, on campbusinessradio.co.uk. I'd like to say a massive thank you to today's show sponsors, 3AAA, the apprenticeship company based in Maidstone, covering the whole of Kent for business, admin, social media and digital apprentices. I'd like to say a massive thank you to our 3 studio guests, Mr. Roy Stannard of One Media and Market Study Group and radio presenter on Seahaven FM, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Don't forget to listen in. And our fabulous guest, Mr. Kevin Bates of Medic Health, insurance broker for businesses in terms of medical insurance, health insurance, and all things protective of us old folks in business.
Key person.
Yeah, a key man insurance. Also, we heard from the fabulous Mr. Matt Fillery of 133, graphic designer, talking about branding, graphics and images of our businesses. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being on the show today. It's been an absolute pleasure. You can hear all about these guys by going to the website and following up with the links that are there. But we'll be back with you next week.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.